I'm Joe Wood, and I believe.
July 24, 1948. Clarence Childs and his co-pilot John Whitted are flying an Eastern Airlines passenger plane near Montgomery, Alabama. It's a clear night, 2:45 a.m. The pair notice a dull red glow above and ahead of them. The object closes in on their DC-3 in a matter of seconds. It flies past them on the right-hand side, and then with a burst of flame from its rear, it zooms upward. Passenger C.L. McKelvey also sees a streak of light out his window. The U.S. military dismissed the sighting as a meteor, but the three men point out that meteors fall down, not horizontally, before shooting upward.
Welcome to Alien Nation, the ongoing series about extraterrestrials and UFOs, which asks the question, are we alone? I'll be talking to celebrities and everyday people who also believe and have their own incredible stories to share. We'll talk about well-documented cases, we'll examine the theories and the counter-theories, but mostly we'll just share our own personal experiences together. So get in touch with your own stories. I'll tell you how to do that at the end of the show. My guest today is designer and activist Vin of Vin and Omi, the fabulous, wonderful, gorgeous Vin. Hello, Vin.
Hello, Joe. I don't know about all that, but I am Vin, yes.
And you're wonderful, and I love everything that you do. I think you're both so brilliant, and I loved walking in your last show.
You were great walking in our last show.
Oh,
you light up the place, darling. You really do.
Oh, thank you. Anyway, fashion isn't what we're going to talk about today. Today, I want to know when you saw a UFO, and you've been holding this story back from me for ages. So I'm desperate.
Well, I've got a couple of stories. So shall we start from the very beginning of things?
I think we should start from the beginning.
Right. Well, I suppose as a kid, I've always felt there was something else there, and I've never really known what it was. And I'm sure a lot of kids say that. A lot of people feel that too. So I'm certainly not unique there. I suppose my earliest memory of something else different was when I was about 10 years old, I think.
Yeah.
I used to have like Batman was really big then because I'm that old. We had this like rubber sort of darts where you used to like fire them into like a rotating board. Anyway,
oh, yeah.
This board, I remember taking this board and turning it into a Ouija board. And I got all the local kids around because I'd seen it somewhere on TV.
Yeah.
And we sort of lit a few candles in my dad's shed. And we just did the Ouija board. Now, I know this is not about aliens, but it's about whatever's out there other than us, really. That's what I'm thinking. I'm just starting with this. So we spelt out the name of something when we did this Ouija board. And honestly, it wasn't us moving it. Something was moving it. Then suddenly, this bucket of shells that was on my dad's shed flew across the bloody wall and smashed on the other side of the wall. And we were terrified. We were absolutely terrified. And without doubt, I remember it to this day. I remember every second of that moment to this day. And I remember the fear of that shell bucket flying past us and hitting the wall and smashing. There's nobody else there. The adults didn't know that we were doing that. And we were terrified. We really felt we'd stirred up some demon, you know.
Yeah, I bet.
It wasn't pleasant. And that sort of stayed in my head, that sort of feeling that, and I've always felt there's something else out there. So aliens to me are something that are always going to be there. There's definitely aliens as well. I don't really have a religion. I suppose my religion is aliens or are aliens.
And, yeah, me too.
And I really believe that, you know, we're not alone. And I think the first time I saw anything that, so I've always looked upwards anyway, and I haven't really seen anything until there was one encounter many years ago, which I'll tell you about later after this. But when we moved from cities to the countryside, we moved to the Cotswolds where they film The Sky at Night and other places because there's very little residual light here. There's very few buildings. Mm-hmm. So the night is just black, really black. And the stars are really bright because there's no houses for miles and it's grey. And there's lots of hilltops to sit on and look at stars. So I took to dog walking at night, and we had our two dogs. We've only got one now, but he's 12 now. So throughout their whole life, I've been walking them every night. And I always walk at night because that's when we finish work and we've got a bit of time. And I'm always looking upwards. Mm. And the first time I walked and saw something, it was just in the very, very distant. And if I see any movement, I stop and I look and I focus and I think, right, what's that? Is it a satellite going around? No, it's in a straight line. Count that out. Is it a shooting star? No, count that out. And I was just standing there, and it was a jumpy little light. It was a jumpy little thing. And it was way above what a plane could be. It was way above what a helicopter could be. And it was jumping like a little beam jumping. And there was no laser anywhere. It was just way, way in the distance. I'm fairly sort of logical and a bit skeptical about other people playing tricks and stuff like that. No other people for miles and miles. So I just stood there and watched it, and it jumped and it jumped, and it slightly went red and it slightly went green, and it was way in the distance, and it jumped and it jumped, and it kind of carried on for, I don't know, this one was a long one, I think a couple of hours, I think it was.
My God.
And it was jumping all over the place, and there's nothing else I could think that it could be other than a spaceship in the distance. And it was moving so fast, but jumping at right angles, like forming triangles, forming different shapes, but way in the distance. And that was that. And I just thought, well, that was a spaceship without that. And that was probably, 9 years ago, something like that. Then roll on to the next time I thought I saw something was, it was about 4 a.m, because I worked through the night as well. And it was about 4 a.m, and I'd gone to the 24-hour Tesco's in Evesham, which is down in a valley. And I was sort of like half dozing and just driving around down to Evesham. And I turned the corner and I saw this red thing glowing in the sky. So I thought, oh, it's a spaceship again, without even thinking about it. So I stopped the car, stood on the car bonnet, watched this thing. I know, because I'm completely ready to be bloody abducted. I'm so obsessed with it. And I thought, right, they're coming to get me. This is all fine. And I watched the sky turn red, then turn green. And what it was weirdly and freakily the bloody Northern Lights hitting the Cotswolds. Which is very occasionally, like once in a blue moon, it comes down this south, and it was the Northern Lights. So that wasn't an alien spaceship. I'm like, oh, okay. So, but it was incredible. And then later, roll on to a couple of weeks ago, and I think I told you about this when it happened.
Yeah, you told me. Yeah.
Yeah, I was out walking the dog, and Omi had just finished some work as well. He'd been out. He was sitting near the car and walking the dog along this very flat plain along the top of a hill in the North Cotswolds, and it was very, very, very dark, apart from, I think in the distance was some house lights or something, but no other buildings for miles. And I saw that light again that I'd seen 9 years ago, the same spaceship.
Same kind of thing.
Yeah, this time I had my mobile phone, and I filmed it. Now, it's a mobile phone, it's an iPhone, and this was, it must be, like, you know, sort of rocket level, at spaceship level, at the space station level, because it's so far away. But my iPhone ignored all the other stars and just picked out this little blip that kind of went a little bit red and then a little bit green and jumped around. And it was the same thing. The same thing I'd seen 9 years ago. And I still don't have an explanation for that. And we watched it for about an hour. Omi's like, oh, yeah, that's definitely an alien ship. And he's very matter of fact of it. And to this day, I know for sure that those two occurrences of those two ships were aliens.
Yeah.
But let me tell you about the event where I saw an alien.
Oh, this is the big one. Really?
This is what I've only told a few people because, you know, it does sound batshit, but it's exactly what happened many, many years ago. This was probably, let me think how old I was. God, I don't know how old I was, but it was probably 20 odd years ago or more. Yeah. I used to have a small hotel in Ibiza.
Oh, did you? How fascinating.
Yeah, it was in the north of Ibiza. Yeah. And I was a young kid and I used to run this hotel and it used to completely knacker me out. And at nights, before the night shift started, I used to like run from Santualia in the north of the island down to Escavaguet in the south. It was 20 odd miles because I used to be an athlete as well. I used to be very fit. Love my running. And, you know, once every couple of weeks, I'd do this like almost marathon run. And it's through the hills and it's really beautiful. And I used to de-stress that way. But I used to end up near Escavaguet, where the beaches are at the bottom, where the salt flats are. And it was very sort of twilight by the time I arrived there, absolutely knackered, covered in sweat. And I used to lie on this very small beach just to like sort of meditate, really, and sort of get my thoughts and just sort of collect before I'd either get a taxi home or, if I'm really crazy, run back. But I, you know, nearly always used to get a taxi back. And I was just lying there on this tiny beach, probably room for about 20 people only, and it's only accessed down a little rocky path. And there was nobody there. It was getting dark. It was getting evening time, and it's way away from the crowds, and it's the middle of nowhere. And I just lay there, like, looking at the water. I'd done this maybe 20 times before, 10 times before, something like that. And so it was nothing new. I was just lying there. And then this diver came up from the water. Oh, and it was just me and him. And I thought, you know,
What the hell is he doing?
Well, I was just going to swear. I'm not. Am I loud? I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah. Well, I thought, what the fuck is this? And it looked like a turtle, and it was like a small turtle coming up the beach. And I thought, turtle in Ibiza? Do they have turtles? I don't know. And it was coming towards the beach fairly fast, and then it sort of stood up, and I'm like, that ain't a turtle. And I thought, okay, it's a diver.
Yeah.
And it was a tall diver guy, and he just walked up the beach, and it was just me lying there in my sweaty sports stuff at the side of the beach. And he just walked straight past me, completely ignored me, didn't say hello, walked behind me to the back of this little cove where it's all rock.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to turn around. I felt a bit awkward. I didn't say hello or anything. I just didn't know what was going on. And then I thought, well, he's a diver and he's just been diving. So anyway, I turned around and saw him coming towards me. He ignored me again. He went back into the water. And I thought, okay, he's going back wherever he's come from. Then it went very, 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 very ultraviolet under the water.
Yeah.
And something jetted off. And I just lay there thinking, I have no idea what that was.
Oh, my God, how fascinating.
Then it hadn't finished. I lay there and I thought, right, this is a bit weird. That was something I hadn't seen before. Remember, this is 20 years ago where there wasn't that much technology zipping around. And then it came back again. This light came back again, and then I started to freak out a bit. I thought, no, this is like, I'm not sure what. I didn't really equate it with an alien then. I thought, this is just weird. Something's going on. Then this guy came out again. He went up. He went to the back of the cove again.
I wonder and what he was doing.
This time I said to him, hi, how are you doing? And I said it in Spanish as well. No response whatsoever. Just completely ignored it. Ignored me completely.
What was he wearing?
He was wearing sort of, I'd like to say, it felt like, it looked like a drippy material. It was like latex, but wasn't.
Oh. Because
it was matter. But you could see the drips of water coming off it, but it looked a bit sort of thick, a bit like neoprene fabric, a bit sort of wetsuity, but not. It wasn't anything like that. I'd say it's breathable. So it could almost have been skin. Thinking about it now, but at the time you don't think that's actual someone's skin. You think he's wearing something, but it could have been skin. But it was slightly darker then. I couldn't catch a face or a facial expression. Yeah. He looked like he'd been in a fight or something. The front of his face was a bit flat, like his nose was a bit bashed in. He didn't have a protruding nose. I remember that. I remember a flatness to the front of his face.
Yeah.
And what I remember was a very sort of lollipy walk. Like a very sort of long-leggedy, lollipy walk. As he went back into the water and he went down into the water, then this ultraviolet light came on again. And this time it was slightly darker, so it was a little bit brighter.
Mm.
And I thought, right, something's going on. And this ultraviolet light zipped through the water, probably the same speed as about a tube train or something like that. And then you just saw this spark flick into the air. About a mile or two out, flick into the air.
Oh, my God, how
just
amazing.
Flicked into the air. It flicked into the air, and I'm like, oh, my God, for fuck's sake, that was an alien.
Yeah. Oh, my God, so you really saw an alien.
I saw a fucking shape that looked just blank, expressionless. It was not the least bit interested in me whatsoever.
Well, they say they walk among us.
Well, I totally believe they do.
Yeah.
And since then, I mean, that was 20-odd years ago. Since then, I've always been looking at people's faces and thinking...
People's faces and looking at the sky. I do that. I look to the sky. That's amazing, Vin. I love that story. I can just visualise that whole thing. That's great.
I can feel it now, you know, when I'm telling you. And it's like sometimes when I'm sort of like feeling a bit stressed, I go back to that beach in my head and he pops up. because I can't associate myself with that little meditation beach and him, really. I mean, he pops up. But it feels natural to me now, you know?
Yeah.
It just feels completely natural.
Yeah, and I think the thing about believing in UFOs and aliens and people from other planets visiting us, so many people don't want to believe that. And I think the more we talk about it, the more people will, you know, not think you're crazy for talking about it.
Exactly.
I mean, right now, people look at me when I say, oh, I'm doing an alien podcast. They think you're all right, Joe. But I really think that we shouldn't be so small-minded. I mean, that is really compelling evidence. That really is. It's a shame you didn't have your phone with you and had a camera.
Yeah, well, I've still got it on my phone. Next time I see you, I'll show you. I was going to show you last week and I forgot. But I've still got it on there. And, you know, I mean, someone needs to explain what it is then. Do you know what I mean? Someone needs to explain who that bloke was.
I don't think they will. And I think the people that believe will just keep looking and looking and trying to get more and more evidence. I don't understand why we aren't open with it, well, the governments aren't open with it. You know, look at Roswell.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about Roswell?
Well, I mean, they say it's a cover-up, and I totally believe it is, because in the way that, I mean, you even see now, I mean, with the current sort of political situation there, how they're covering up everything. So, of course, they're going to cover up anything that's going to cause a national crisis or can be used as a national weapon. I mean, they're going to cover any of that up. So anything that's of use to them in the future in any way will be covered up. So,
and they'll keep all that information and use it for themselves, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely, 100%. And so I have no doubts about Roswell whatsoever. And I think, you know, there's all these theories that come out that, you know, they could be jellyfish, they could have descended from, you know, I mean, there's lots of other ways of looking at it. And we don't know. We don't know where aliens live, whether they were here, whether we're just a test planet. Yeah. And, you know, there's lots of different theories about why we're here. And I love listening to all of them because we just don't know. And that's part of the magic.
Yeah, and we have to keep an open mind.
I mean, unfortunately, people don't, though.
Yeah. Actually, Stephen Hawking said that it would be bad news if we ever met aliens. I don't believe that.
I don't believe that because I think we made such a mess of this one. Let's learn how we could do it better. And we're not going to listen to each other. We need somebody else to tell us what we're doing. We need a big shock. Now, if the aliens came down and said, you know, well, for a start, your plastic that you're all throwing away, for a start, the way that climate change is coming along, you know, we'd listen because it would overrule idiots like Trump that don't believe it. Yeah. And it would completely shock the world into doing something because there's no uniting force in our existing planet to do anything.
In saving our planet. I know everybody's around doing their little bit to try and save the planet, but really we need a huge force that to shock everybody and make everybody change because it's
absolutely.
It's not
tomorrow it could be global legislation for lots of things that could immediately start to save the planet and everything would be fine, and you know, like sort of deforestation and everything would be sort of reversed. Now that may take an alien coming down and saying, you know, come on, you idiots, sort this out, sort that out, sort that. Then I think we should meet them.
I think we could say to them, tell us what we should do.
Yeah, because we're crap at this. Tell us what to do next.
Have you heard of the famous place in England called Rendlesham?
No, I haven't.
There's three men from the military and the RAF saw a small metallic glowing. They actually recorded it. The guy is recording saying, you know, you could hear him on his cassette player recording what he was seeing. It's amazing. You should look up Rendlesham.
What's that, Rendlesham? No, yeah. I will, definitely. Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's lots of evidence out there.
Yeah. There is, and there's lots of evidence in America and other countries as well, where, you know, the country's a lot bigger than ours. And you know, the thing is, why aren't these all pulled together and really analysed rather than kind of, you know, dusted under the carpet like they are? Very weird, very, very, very weird. I'm 100% a believer, obviously, from my own experiences. But I think from the early child sort of age as well, I knew there was something else there. I don't know whether you link sort of, you know, spiritual phenomena and aliens. I don't know. I mean, but then again, it's another thing we don't know. We don't know at all.
I mean, there's that whole thing about dark matter as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Intriguing.
Absolutely.
Why do you think the aliens don't come in just like Independence Day and just sort of appear and everybody looks up and there they are, and instead of, they hide behind governments. So, what is going on? I don't get that. They must have some kind of deal with each other. You know, the government has said, you can't show yourself. I don't know.
I mean, are we an experiment for the aliens? I mean, is our whole planet an experiment for a much bigger society, a much bigger race that is just playing with us or watching us and experimenting? And with any scientific experiments, you don't really intervene, do you? You let people get on and mess it all up themselves. That's what the experiment's about. That's one theory, which, you know, I think when they kind of fall from Earth or when they get caught out and stuff, the aliens, it's like each country just buries that information, never shares it. Again, there's no global unifying thing, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I was always fascinated by the concept of scale when I was a kid, like, you know, the size of things. And I still am. It's like, you know, I mean, you know, you look at those charts where, you know, the Earth is this big, the sun is that big, the next planet is that big and that big and that big and that big. And obviously we are just tiny, tiny, tiny little things floating around this absolutely enormous space. So if there are aliens, and they are, from my opinion, they're, when they came here, they were a similar size to us, a bit bigger, but similar size. And the previous ones have been smaller. They're, you know, they're similar Earth sort of size. So I presume that there's another race somewhere that's on another planet that is actually come over here to use our planet to actually just do a bit of an experimentation. They're watching us. We think it's taking centuries. To them, it might be minutes.
Yeah, you don't know, do you? Time is such a weird thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all scale. And it's like, so, you know, if we're just in a sort of 30-minute experimentation, to them, they're just waiting for it to be over. So we've got all these expectations going, why don't they appear? Why don't they do this and do that? They're sitting there in some laboratory going, oh, it'll be over soon.
You know, there is one theory about the Anunnaki. And the Anunnaki were giants. And really need from this planet was the gold.
Yes.
And there is stories about how the Anunnaki made us beings so that we could mine their gold, and what they needed their gold, and this planet had loads of it. So that's that's one story. But I think there's many different races of aliens. That's why you can look at the people of the world and see there's Japanese, Chinese, Indians. We can't all have come from the same thing.
No. And, I mean, you get fossils now, and it's like, you know, they're still finding out different variations of our own ancestry, you know, of our own origins. So then to actually expect that we would know about aliens, we don't even know about ourselves properly yet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, I want to ask you what you're doing now.
We're completely obsessed with all of our work in actually doing social interaction projects that turn waste materials, really, or new materials like organic materials into fabrics so we can then use it for fashion and develop social interaction projects. So, for example, we're working at the moment with the Riverkeeper project in New York. That's just coming to fruition now, where we've taken lots of plastic from the Hudson River and we're using that plastic to make into textiles, which have just arrived. Great textiles have arrived in America. And we're going to turn those textiles into, I think it's accessories for the organization, the Riverkeeper organization that then collects the plastic. So it's a full circle where they're collecting the plastic, we're turning it into textiles, we're making it into accessories that go back to the organization. And we're doing that a lot with different groups around the world. So we're doing one in China as well, where it's quite interesting working in countries that don't really deal with eco. That's more of a drive for us now, is working on projects where we're making a difference. Because a lot of countries now are aware of salvaging plastic, are aware of doing that. So, you know, they're getting set up. Over here, we worked with 22 organizations for the last show, because it's very labor intensive. Very, very labor intensive. We're just starting to work with the Sea Scouts, and who are collecting it for us. And the Marine Conservation Society are coming on board as well. So we're setting up sort of networks of plastic salvage and then turning it into textiles. And then what we're going to be doing is making sure that goes to the right places. And we've got a great new project coming up in London as well, a real big one that we're just starting to discuss on. So we've got lots and lots and lots
of
great projects.
You are so busy.
I'm very little. Little design is done because we're too busy coordinating these social projects. So people say you're a fashion designer. It's like, when?
But like, I love what you do, Vin. I think you guys do the best. best stuff in the world, and that is the future. It really is.
Well, I think every fashion company's got to turn sustainable and eco, otherwise they'll die. And it's like, you know, that's just the right thing to do, you know. And I think because we started a long time ago, we kind of got a heads up. So we're, but we're also not too big to actually mess around a bit. So we can actually, you know, play a bit with fabrics. We can do some experimentation, and it's not going to cripple our retail sales because we don't do that. Yeah. You know, so I think the way that we play around, experiment, come up with the right social project, we're ready to move towards, you know, a bit of retail marketing soon and a bit of retail selling of all of these textiles and clothes and get them in the right hands. But we've built up a lovely following of people that really support us. And it's great. It's great to see that after all these years, people are going, yeah, you're doing the right thing. Keep doing it.
Yeah, you really are. Lovely. I believe in you so much.
Well, you were one of our first inspirations, I tell you. It's like one of the first people that said, oh, yeah, you've been doing it way longer than us. Because, I mean, you are 30 years older than me. So it's like, you know, I mean, no.
No.
You're not. I'm joking. We're about the same age.
We do not talk about age, Vern.
I know you don't. I'm joking. We are the same age. I'm joking. You know, you started it years ago, didn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, you were thinking about it years ago.
Yeah,
and you were
an
inspiration.
I was obsessed years ago about everything green and what we're doing to the planet and what I was putting in my body and on and on and on. In fact,
Why did you start then? What made you start?
I got ill and I met a herbalist and he cleaned my body out with diet and his herbs. And then he talked to me about the food I was eating and the chemicals that were on the food and what they do to the body and all that sort of thing. And I sat there and I thought, he makes absolute complete sense, and how have we come so far away from what we are naturally supposed to put in our bodies that feeds our body and replenishes the cells and does this and does that? We are nuts. We've gone mad. And in that one moment, he changed my life forever, and I became so obsessed with everything. Keith turned around to me and goes, the trouble with you, darling, is that you're addicted to organic food. I said, coming from you, Keith Richards, that's very funny.
Exactly. That's the best thing to be addicted. How brilliant. How brilliant. Anyway. But you're right. We're kind of like reversing it all to what we used to do. I mean, a lot of our weaving processes now with like nettles and natural fabrics that they used to do from time began, you know.
Yeah.
And it's the same
process.
Well,
your last show was called Rewind.
It was. It's like Planet Rewind. Let's rewind the planet. Let's rewind the planet and hope the aliens visit us.
Yes, and be happy with us. Yes.
Yes.
Vin, I love talking to you. It was so great. Thank you for your time. I'll let you get back to your lovely home in the Cotswolds.
Thanks, Jo. Thanks. Lovely to talk to you. See you soon.
I'll see you really, 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 really soon.
Really soon. Really soon. All see right. you. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. That's our show for today. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please rate us on whatever platform you get your podcast from. It helps people like you find us. Today's show was produced by Mike Hansen for Pod People Productions. Associate producer Colette Cooper. Theme music by Mike Hansen and Jamie Allen. Special thanks to Nigel Heath. And our narrator, Mike Hansen Sr. If you want to share your stories, we'd love to hear from you. Just email info@podpeopleproductions.co.uk, subject matter, alien nation. Beam me up next time. I'm Jo Wood. And I believe.